Hello, everyone. I am loving these episodes where we have real clients and members of our community come on and share vulnerable stories on our podcast. And today is one of those episodes. I'm interviewing one of my longtime clients, Kelly. She is amazing and she is so real and raw and vulnerable in this episode. Anybody who has ever struggled with emotional eating, especially out of loneliness or boredom or depression, is really going to resonate with her story and also learn some strategies to help overcome emotional eating. We talk about the things that really helped Kelly overcome that need to just rely on comfort food at night. We talk about her strategies for when she's eating out because she's a social butterfly and how she created balance without depriving herself. Because the last thing we want to do when we are emotionally eating habitually is try to deprive ourselves, create rules around food that typically results in a backslide. We talked about the balance of macronutrients that she eats to help her feel fueled and how she prioritized self-care to help her overcome emotional eating. I know you guys are going to love this episode. Thank you again to Kelly in advance for being a part of the Nutrition Awareness Podcast. Buckle up, guys. It's going to be a great one. Welcome to the Nutrition Awareness Podcast, co-hosted by yours truly, Kate Richardson
and Megan Pacheci. We're two registered dietitians here to make your life easier by debunking diet myths, sharing scientific information about nutrition, and keeping you motivated to reach your goals.
We want to teach you everything we know by giving you real life examples of how we've helped our combined thousands of clients transform their lives, lose weight, and get healthy without having to go on another cookie cutter diet.
On this podcast, we'll be giving you our best advice, strategies, and mindset shifts so you too can reach your goals using food and, most importantly, enjoy the process.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Nutrition Awareness Podcast. I'm Kate, and I am here with a very special guest all the way on the West Coast joining me for a podcast. Kelly, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, of course. So my name is Kelly. I'm a nurse that's living in California. And I have been struggling with my weight and eating since I was a teenager.
Yeah. That's not an unfamiliar story for a lot of us. I feel like that's where it really, like, for many of us starts in adolescence, sometimes childhood. Do you remember the first time you went on a diet or had some kind of disordered thoughts around food?
I sure do. It was like the summer between 7th and 8th grade. And I was reading one of my mom's weight loss books that was talking about diet and exercise. And I tried following the plan that that book set out. And I was doing the exercises every single morning and trying to eat what the diet said. I don't even remember what kind of diet it was, but it was some sort of low carb, low fat, like typical, like late 90s, early 2000s diets, like carbs are bad.
We have the same exact first diet story. I don't know if it was my mom's book or a book that she bought me out of, well-intentioned, but the book that I got was called The Secrets of Skinny Chicks. And it was literally a book that just tells about all these women's body metrics, like their weight, their waist circumference, their height, and then it tells you everything that they eat and do in a day. And I just remember they would do 2-a-day workouts. Their diets were really strict, and then they would tell you, the reader, what to do. And like I was 13, so I was in 7th grade as well. And it's just so crazy to think about doing all of these things when you were just 13 years old. And how do you feel like that impacted you in your adulthood?
It made it so that I put all of these rules on foods and on eating, rules on exercise that shouldn't have necessarily been there. Carbs are bad. Fat is bad. I need to follow a paleo diet, no grains, like high protein, things like that. All of these rules I had set in place from all of these specific diets that I've done throughout the years had followed me up until the time that we first started working together. And it's just, they're arbitrary rules and they just I couldn't get them out of my head.
Yeah, when you follow more than one diet in your life, which many of us have, at least if we get to the point of struggling, like we followed a lot of diets, it just becomes clutter in our brain, all these different rules, and then they start to contradict each other. You know, carbs are bad, but eat vegan. And most of the vegan diet is carbohydrate based. So all these different things can just get really confusing in your brain. And I don't know about you, but when I'm confused and overwhelmed, I do nothing. I give up, or I just go to the opposite end of the spectrum, which would be overeating, emotionally eating, and throwing all caution to the wind.
Definitely. I am big on the emotional eating side of things.
Well, I'd argue as being your dietitian, you were big on the emotional eating. I think any of us who have struggled with emotional eating, it comes up sometimes. It's very normal for people to eat out of feelings sometimes. But emotionally eating becomes an issue in our life when it starts to take a toll on our mental health, our physical health, our self-esteem. How did emotional eating impact you and your relationship to not only food, but yourself and your body?
Well, I can always remember emotionally eating being like something that I did. You know, as a teen, I would turn to food as a source of comfort when things were difficult. Usually it was when I was alone, and I'd rely on eating like the comfort foods, the high fat, the high salt foods, chips, fast food, things like that, to find comfort and to feel better about, you know, what was happening in my life at the time. Of course, that led to weight gain that I would try to diet to lose. And no matter how much I dieted, I couldn't get past the emotional eating. It was something that I was really struggling with up until, you know, the time that I started working with you.
When you noticed that you were emotionally eating, what was happening? What were the emotions? Was it just one specific thing, or was it a lot of things? Did it always change?
You know, there were a lot of things that caused the emotional eating, but the one primary emotion was loneliness. Mm-hmm. You know, it always happened at night when I was by myself. It happened more often during a breakup. But even then, if there was no breakup, I would just get lonely at night and I would get bored and I'd turn to whatever I had in my home to be able to like bring me some sort of comfort in those lonely times, those lonely moments in my day.
Sure. And we all feel that way sometimes, even people who live with someone else, even people who are in relationships or have a roommate will have moments of loneliness. And it's very normal when we're humans to go find something to distract us from loneliness. Or like you said, boredom. Boredom is emotional eating, to find something to entertain our brain or fill a little void. And we can't always reach out for a social connection or call a friend or dump our feelings onto somebody else. So we have to just use the tools at our disposal. And when we learn about emotional eating when we're really young, because food is just one of those things that's really accessible when we're kids, you know, we don't have access to online shopping or hopefully drugs and alcohol and other unhealthy vices, food just becomes like a very accessible thing that we can learn to rely on when we feel kind of blue and kind of down, and then it can become habitual. And what I also noticed with you, and I think you can remember this too, is when you were dieting or following all these arbitrary food rules, it set you up for failure. So you weren't eating enough of the stuff that really kept you feeling full, like protein and fiber and healthy things, all these things that you maybe were restricting in the past. And then when you show up to your house at night and you're feeling kind of lonely or bored, and you're also hungry because you hadn't been eating enough all day, it's like a double whammy. You know, even if you're mentally telling yourself, don't eat, don't eat, don't eat, or just have carrots and hummus instead of ordering Postmates, it's really hard to overcome that when you're physiologically deprived of the nutrients you need. So one of the things that you and I worked on a lot was making sure that you were eating full, balanced meals. And then we were really able to tackle some of that emotional emotion management that we've both been through before.
Totally. I will say that it blew my mind that I wasn't fueling my body the right way. You know, I always had a very high protein breakfast, low fat, low carbs, a lot of egg whites, which is boring and not the greatest, but you know, I thought that that's what I was supposed to do. And then lunch was always low carb, lower fat, high protein. And I thought that if I was getting my protein in during the day, like that's going to satisfy me. That's going to, you know, make it so that I am not full. And I ended up at nighttime just getting overwhelmingly hungry sometimes, and not necessarily from emotional eating, but just overwhelmingly hungry. The emotional eating didn't help anything. That just made it worse, but I was starving.
Yeah. Your body was just hungry because it was deprived. You were a clean eater. Like you ate really clean, but you weren't eating enough of the right stuff. Your diet looked healthy on paper. It just missed out some things because diets you had followed in the past told you don't eat fat, carbs are bad. And on top of that, you were active too, and you still are. You're exercising, you move, you do Pilates, you do all sorts of different types of activity. And on top of not eating enough and moving a lot and coming home, you would order Postmates or throw caution to the wind. Maybe you would meal prep something, if I remember, or like plan something healthy. But by the time you got home from a job where you're on your feet, by the way, you were just really hungry. And it was really hard to eat chicken and broccoli or whatever it was that you had prepped when your body was starving.
It's not what my body was craving. My body wanted the carbs. They wanted the it wanted carbs. It wanted high fat foods. It didn't want chicken and broccoli. It sounded unappealing at the time. So I ended up turning to whatever might be in the cupboard, or Postmates is such an easy option, like ridiculously easy. Mm-hmm. And when I was in that mindset of just hunger or emotional eating, it was easy to pick the poorer options on the menus for Postmates.
Yeah, you know, what people don't always understand is that yes, food is energy, but all of the macronutrients are different. So when you're just eating protein, you're not giving your body a lot of usable energy. Carbohydrates are our body's quickest, most preferred source of fuel, and fat can also be used for fuel. Protein is only used for fuel when there is nothing else available, and it's really inefficient for our bodies to take a protein molecule and turn it into energy. So you weren't eating much energy throughout the day, and so you came home and your body craved excess amounts of not so healthy, quick digesting and quick absorbing energy, like sugar and fat in combination. So once you started eating healthier, balanced meals, how did you feel?
I found that I was not hungry at night, aside from emotional eating, but I was not hungry. I didn't feel like I needed to eat anything that was available. I was satisfied with eating the meal that I had prepared, you know, the day before. And I was perfectly content and satisfied with my dinner, whereas I wasn't before.
One thing that I loved that you knew about yourself is that you needed to have a satisfying dinner, not only from a macronutrient standpoint that had fat and had carbs and fiber and all that good stuff, but it also had to be mentally satisfying. It had to taste good. You really enjoy cooking, which gives you an upper hand. So you wanted to have nice recipes and you plated them well. I think that was a mini win for you when you realized that, because then you treated dinner and mealtime as an event, and that did something for you. It made it special. What would you say that did for you?
No, it definitely made it special. It made me more mindful of what I was eating and how I was eating it. I live by myself, and so it's so easy to sit on the couch and eat my meal, even if it's a nice, well-balanced meal, while I'm watching TV and not listen to the cues from my body. And I noticed that if I made dinner a special time and I prepared something special and I plated it very, you know, it was very beautiful and I sat down and I gave myself 15 minutes to eat, yes. that I not only was satisfied, like my hunger was satisfied, but mentally I was satisfied too, because I just had a beautiful meal and I was able to actually enjoy it because I wasn't distracted by what was on the TV.
Yeah. Or just like eating something that was delivered to your door that you really didn't put your heart and soul or thought into. There's something very human about cooking our own meals and eating it. I think that was a big thing for you too. So one of the themes that came up when we were working with your emotional eating is how deprivation never works. So we didn't want to think about what to eat less of at dinner. We didn't want to cut carbs from dinner so you could eat carbs from sugar later. We wanted to think about the things that would fill you up, that would nourish you. And then even if you did want something after dinner, we had to create ideas so that you would have permission to eat after dinner if you wanted to. And I think that mm-hmm. was a little bit tricky. It was tricky for me when I was in the midst of emotional eating to give myself permission to have something after dinner if I wanted it. And then it became more of an option over time. Like you didn't have to have something after dinner. You didn't have to have a sweet because it was always available to you. So what were some things that you have found really helped you after dinner if you do just want the taste of something sweet or you want a little treat?
I found that if I ate something right after dinner, so mm-hmm. I was still full from the food that I just ate, and I wasn't going to get that sugar crash. A little piece of chocolate. Mm-hmm. If I waited a little bit longer and I found that I was craving something sweet or something particular before bed, mm-hmm. I liked making like a cup of Greek yogurt with like berries mm-hmm. and a little bit of peanut butter or something satisfying like that. And I also got a Ninja Creami. And
I so I make my,
yeah, it's been the best thing ever. I make my own frozen yogurt with like less sugar, more protein. I'm very cognizant of what I put into it. And so it's a healthy option for someone that like craves sweet things or like cold things. You know, in the summer, ice cream is always my go-to. So it's nice to be able to have that option where I know exactly what's in it because I need it. It's so satisfying. It really hits the spot.
Yeah, I love when I would look through your food log because you became so mindful about if you were hungry. So we used a tool together called the hunger scale, and it helped you really identify if you were hungry for more food, if you needed more fuel, and then you would meet your needs. So if you were hungry, you would eat something, especially something that had protein and fiber, like your Greek yogurt or cottage cheese with fruit. And then you'd also let yourself have a little bit of chocolate or sweet or something fun in that after dinner snack because A, you were hungry, and B, you wanted it, and depriving yourself never worked. Like it didn't work when we tried to say, let's not have sugar, let's never have sugar, no more chocolate on the weekdays. We had to include it just as part of a balanced meal and you really tapping into your hunger signal. So if anyone's listening to this and they haven't heard of the hunger scale, you can Google it and find a million hunger scales on Google. It is a number scale from 1 to 10. I've seen some that are 0 to 10. That identify descriptions of hunger and satiety to numbers. So you can kind of just use a little number system. Another thing I thought was really like a light bulb for you was seeing your evening routine differently, right? Because in the past you were like, okay, sometimes I feel kind of lonely or bored or just kind of in my head by myself. And your automatic response was that was a negative thing. What did you do to make you feel like your evenings alone weren't so lonely after all?
This was something that was so groundbreaking for me. I remember reaching out to you after I had gone out with friends. We had had dinner. I was full, mm-hmm. but yet I was still craving comfort food. Like for some reason, I wanted like something sweet. Even though I was full. And I'm like, what is going on? I ended up overdoing it on like food after and just getting so incredibly full. And I just felt so bad about myself. So I reached out to you and we had talked about like reframing my mindset and mm-hmm. thinking that these moments when I'm alone are not bad things. I'm not always going to be able to be alone. and to take it as a moment to be grateful for the fact that I have the time by myself to recharge, to rest. It really like changed my mindset in like an incredible way, to where when I'm home, instead of feeling sad that I'm by myself, I can take it as, you know what, this is great. I'm able to rest. I'm able to catch up on my TV show. I'm able to do my 12-step skincare routine that I wouldn't be able to do if someone else was here, and really take time for myself. And that will make me a better person tomorrow, because I've taken the time to recharge and reset. It's not a bad thing to be by myself. It's a really good thing. And I'm not always going to have that.
Yeah.
So I'll take it when I can.
And I love that so much, because you just changed your perspective and you saw these hours in the evening as opportunities to fill your cup. And that meant that maybe sometimes you would eat something and other times you would do more than just eating something. So you would make a purposeful choice if you were going to eat something, but it was also in the context of enjoying your solitude. And what's also really cool about you and your journey is you're not alone very often. Maybe on the routine days you'll come home, but you're a social butterfly and you're always traveling. And I feel like every time we have a session, we're planning for your next trip or event. You just had a birthday. You're all over the freaking planet. And, you know, you went to like Africa and Hawaii, and you're always doing a lot of interesting things. So how do you feel like being a social butterfly who's always on the go, how does that impact your relationship with food and emotional eating? And how do you manage all that? Because you also work and go to school.
Yes, I do have a lot on my plate right now. And it's funny you talk about the travel thing. I was just in Mexico this weekend. always using my hunger scale, though, when I ate. but I find that even though I like to stay busy, I like routine in what I do. So it's important for me to be able to set aside time each week to be able to meal prep for work and have my breakfasts and lunches prepared or like ready to go for the workday. That really helps me. Also, like knowing my dinner plan for the week, whether I'm cooking and I'll have leftovers for a few days, or I'm going out to dinner with friends. I like to know that, you know, during the weekends, so I'm able to plan out what I'm doing for dinners. When I'm out and about with friends, I've never been a big drinker, but I used to not be concerned with having like two or three glasses of wine when I'm out with my friends, because that's the only time I ever do it. I don't drink when I'm by myself. And we talked about that, and I think it was the 2-5 rule, where like, is it two things out of five can be splurge items, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll explain it for the listeners real quick, and then you'll tell them how you used it. So the 2 out of 5 rule is for social butterflies or people who travel a lot for work or who entertain clients. I would categorize this as somebody who eats out more than twice a week. So if you eat out once or twice, okay, but twice, 3 times, 4 times, this is when this tool becomes really handy. When you go out to eat, pick 2 of the following 5 things to maybe splurge on, if that's the right word. One would be the chipper bread basket. 2 would be a shared appetizer, because we all know appetizers almost always aren't the healthiest. 3 would be a beverage that isn't water or like unsweetened iced tea. So this would include alcohol. This would include soda or anything like a sweetened mocktail. 4 would be like a really decadent entree. Think fettuccine Alfredo or cheeseburger and fries, something that's fried and fatty and not so great. And then a dessert. So if you're going out to dinner on Friday and then brunch on Saturday and then lunch on Sunday, at one of those meals, maybe more, you really want to dial in and just pick 1 or 2 of those things from that list of 5.
Yeah. And that's definitely not unheard of for me to have like 3 days in a row going out to eat something with friends. So it was a really important tool for me to be able to plan what I was eating and not feel like I was depriving myself from eating out and still getting what I wanted to, but feeling good about my choices when I ate out was like a huge thing. So I felt good for making certain choices, but I also didn't feel deprived by not having the chips and salsa, you know?
You had to pick and choose what was worth it. Like the chips and salsa and a margarita were worth it, but maybe not the queso smothered chicken nachos, right? So you could pass that up. And maybe you didn't need to split the, I don't know, queso bean, but what's that like chorizo queso dip? Probably didn't need that appetizer. So you could pick the one or two things that were really worth it. So you weren't depriving yourself, but also you were creating boundaries that would get you to a goal. And that's what has to happen. If you're a social eater, you have to create boundaries, and you did a really good job. You continue to do a really good job of that. Every time we talk, it's like a new win. You know, whenever you had a social event, and it's because you planned ahead. And I also wrote down as you were talking, you've always prioritized eating and meal planning and thinking about food, which is huge because you work full time as a nurse, you're in school, you travel a lot, you have a lot of friends, you do a lot of things, you're busy, and you do workout classes. So
yes,
you have to prioritize eating healthy. You don't have to do that, but to get to a goal, you do. And listeners, maybe you're really busy because you're a mom or because you work two jobs, and you're doing all sorts of things. If you don't prioritize healthy eating, then you can't plan ahead and be prepared for situations like this. So that's kind of your superpower, Kelly.
It is. And it's really, I feel like I shine when I have the opportunity to do that. It's also for me another self-care practice. Mm-hmm. You know, being in the kitchen, throwing on a podcast, and meal prepping and cooking is just, it's someplace that it makes me really happy to do that. So if I'm not able to get that in, not only am I not as well prepared, but I am missing that part, and I'm not able to like fully function the way I want to.
I love your perspective about it because it's easy. And I don't blame anyone who doesn't like cooking. I mean, we all have our own thing, but for you and me both, we love being in the kitchen. And that goes back to that emotional eating part. When you come home after work, you see cooking a meal as something that brings you pleasure, that makes your life better, that helps you spend quality time with yourself to create something and enjoy it and then do the dishes or meal prep it for the next day. Like that's something that takes up time and it makes you feel good. And then you walk away from that meal. It's hard to go from that to feeling blue.
Yeah. And it definitely, if I don't get that in, I feel off.
Mm-hmm. Another thing you had done that I thought was really impressive, and I don't know if you still do this because it's not so much of an issue for you anymore, but you had deleted the food delivery apps on your phone for a while.
Yes.
Which helped you when you came home to really pause and decide if you needed to eat something that wasn't from home. And then when you were using the apps, you had gone through and picked out a few restaurants and healthy options at those restaurants. Because if you were just genuinely tired after a long day and didn't want to cook because you were drained and you wanted to rely on Postmates or Uber Eats or whatever it was, you had some good go-to places in your area with healthy options and you didn't have to think about it. You could just pick them. What are you doing now with Postmates, Uber Eats? What's your relationship, for lack of a better term, with food delivery apps?
So it's much better than it was before. That was always my go-to for emotional eating. I would have like three or four different carts lined up because I would, on those moments when I'm laying on the couch or laying in bed thinking, God, I really would like some ice cream or I want a slice of cake or like, oddly enough, a burger sounds good at this time. I would like go through each, like the restaurants. I'd line up a cart and be like, oh no, like I don't need this. Or I would go through and actually buy it and get it delivered. And it was nothing I'd ever needed at the time. So when I first identified that that was a problem with you, I ended up deleting the apps. And I put a lot of like guilt around ordering from the apps. And that led to when I wasn't able to cook or I was too tired or I had too much going on, I ended up not being able to fuel myself right because I didn't even have an option or I felt guilty about ordering from food or ordering food. So I kind of had to reframe my mindset and think it's okay to do this every now and again. I do have those certain restaurants that I order from that have healthy options. I live in Los Angeles. There's so many places to order from that give you really healthy meals. So I stick to the restaurants that I have used in the past, and I know the menu, and I know that it's healthy, and I feel good about the decision, knowing that I'm prioritizing really my self-care over, like sometimes you're just too tired to cook. Sometimes there's just too much going on, and it's okay to order from the app. I just need to be mindful about what I'm ordering.
Your relationship or usage of food apps did a 180, right? Before they were just there because you, like you said, you were under eating and you came home and you were feeling all the things, and that combination just made you surf through the different apps and kind of put things in your cart and eat things that didn't make you feel good, that weren't in alignment with self-care. But that was like an all or nothing approach when you deleted the apps. It went from being poor usage of the apps to not using it at all, and then just feeling guilty or bad when you had a long day and there's no food in the fridge. So your middle ground was to A, make sure you were fueling throughout the day. That's always the key whenever it comes to making healthy choices. You have to fuel with the right stuff all day long, eating enough food so you could go home and you wouldn't be in a place of desperation or having extreme cravings, and you could go through the apps and make a choice that made you feel good. And you said that was prioritizing your self-care, which has been a theme for you. That's kind of been the thing you always go back to, I've noticed, is you eat healthy because it's self-care. You work out because it's self-care. You don't deprive yourself, but you also don't go overboard because that's self-care. And that's been the thing that helps guide your decision making. And I talked about this in another podcast a few episodes ago about when we really value something, it helps us make a decision. So I think I had my client on who is a psychologist, and she brought that up. She goes, when you value something like self-care, you will make a decision based on self-care. So you fuel yourself, you don't deprive yourself, you give yourself a break, and you cook healthy meals other nights. What other things or decisions around self-care have you made that you feel like make a difference or you'd want to share with somebody when it comes to how and what you eat? Or any meal ideas, snack ideas that just make you feel really good? Ooh, I remember something you did that I thought was a really good form of self-care. You were doing a lot. I think you took on another job, and that prevented you from having the time to work out and rest and meal prep. And you decided to take a break from that second job to take care of yourself, which I thought was like the ultimate thing to do because who doesn't want another paycheck and you love your job? So that probably was a really hard decision to make, but you did it for the sake of your own well-being.
I really enjoyed that job so much, but I found that I was so run down that even I wasn't able to cook. I wasn't able to spend the time meal prepping because I was in my car driving a lot back and forth between that second job. And usually on the weekends, I spent a lot of time working on school, and I would allow myself, the few hours to be able to do my meal prep. But instead of doing that, I was spending those few hours with the second job, or after work, few hours with the second job, as opposed to going home and being able to cook dinner or being able to get a workout in. And I remember like us talking about that, and I felt so off. I'd been doing so well, and I was just feeling so off. And we talked about maybe putting a pause on that. And I said, I think I need to. I don't think I can keep this up and still be able to prioritize my health.
Right.
And it was the best decision I made.
Yeah.
Another thing was changing up my workouts. I used to lift really heavy, really heavy, 2 days a week and do Pilates and go running. And I found on those days that I lifted weights that I, for like 2 days after, I was starving. And I never put it together that it was from that. But after talking with you, I was able to recognize that that's where I was coming from. So I stopped lifting weights and I'm doing more Pilates, which is something that I absolutely love to do. But I'm also doing more like cardio Pilates workouts or HIIT workouts. And I do get hungry from those. But if I have something small to eat before I work out, that's able to, you know, I don't get hungry after the workouts like I did with lifting weights.
You're really mindful and you're really aware. So you were able to recognize patterns and drop into your body and say, this is what's happening. This might be causing this. I'm going to change up what I'm doing, see how it goes. So you leaned into doing more exercise that you still enjoy, and you became very aware and mindful on how those impact your hunger. And then going back to that self-care piece, you ate before you worked out so that you wouldn't leave that workout feeling depleted. And that's also self-care, and that's also awareness.
Yeah.
Kelly, I've seen your transformation from when we started working together about a year ago. And, you know, we all emotionally eat. Sometimes it's a very normal human thing to do, or we do something that's out of emotion that maybe isn't totally in alignment with what we'd want. But if that ever happens to you, it's very rare, it's small, and you pick right back up the next day like nothing happened and continue to move forward. As we wrap up today with our last few minutes, if you had a friend who was struggling with the same things that you were struggling with, like that intense diet clutter, all those rules that you were following and emotional eating, what's one piece of advice you would give them?
I mean, first of all, I would recommend that they work with you. but the one piece of advice that I would say is to make sure that you feel your body right. Because for me, that was the key in making sure that I wasn't hungry. And it's so important to be able to do that. And it's so easy to think that all of these things are bad for us when actually it's what our body needs. We need carbs, we need fat, we need protein, and we need it in the right balance for ourselves. And each person is different. And to me, that was the key to changing everything about what I ate.
Yeah, you weren't afraid to eat, right? Before you were afraid, you had all these rules. So don't be afraid to fuel your body right. It needs food, it needs energy. I can't thank you enough for joining us on the podcast and being so honest and raw and sharing your story and sharing your advice. I mean, I think anybody listening to this can relate to at least one thing. Anybody who's struggled with emotional eating can relate to at least one thing that you said. And I know that I'd struggled with emotional eating in my past, also out of loneliness. Same thing. Would come home and just feel overwhelmed by the rest of the time that I had. And it wasn't until I really took a look on the inside and look at my diet that I was able to overcome that. And it's been amazing to watch your journey. So thank you again for joining us today, Kelly. We appreciate you. And everyone who listened, if you have any thoughts or feedback, or you want me to relay a message to Kelly about anything from her story that really touched you or resonated with you, send us a message on Instagram, nutrition.awareness, and I will share that with her. Otherwise, Kelly, all the way from the West Coast, calling in from work, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate. I really appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Nutrition Awareness Podcast. And if you did find it helpful and want to share it with the whole world, screenshot this episode and tag us on Instagram in your stories at nutrition.awareness so we can connect with you.
To get notified about the next episode of Nutrition Awareness, be sure to hit subscribe so you never miss an episode.
And to create your own personalized nutrition plan with us, be sure to schedule your virtual or in-person consultation on our website, www.orlandodietitian.com.
Now get out there, fuel up, and live your healthiest life. We'll see you on the next episode.